the GP Plus Careers Podcast.
Are you a GP hoping to diversify your career? Perhaps you've got a passion for women's health or have ambitions to be an expedition GP. Or maybe you've just always wondered, what would it be like to be a GP working in a prison? Well, this will hopefully be the podcast for you. My name's Sophie Lumley. I'm a First Five GP in the West Midlands and also a training programme director. I certainly fell into the above category, and I was keen to start this podcast to find out about the breadth of career options available to me, my colleagues and my trainees. I've been lucky enough to interview fellow GPs who've had some of these extra roles. They've told me what their role involves, how they got there, and the tips and advice that they have for those hoping to follow in their footsteps. I really hope you enjoy listening and feel as inspired as I have in speaking to them. So I'm really pleased today to be joined by Callum Leese, who's a GP with an extended role in lifestyle medicine. So over to you, Cal. Can you start by telling us what exactly lifestyle medicine is?
Lifestyle medicine can mean loads of different things to loads of different people. And there's six pillars of lifestyle medicine: mental well-being, minimizing harmful substances, healthy relationships, healthy eating, sleep, and physical activity. One thing that I am aware about lifestyle medicine is it's at risk of possibly being misinterpreted for two reasons. One is we need to be really careful when we talk about it that we're not insinuating blame in any way. And I think that's going to be really clear. We kind of need to acknowledge that there's kind of social, economic determinants of health that people often don't have much choice or influence over the situation they find themselves in, and therefore the choices that they make. And so it's making sure that we're not blaming people. And the second is, I think, you know, whether we like it or not, lifestyle medicine has become quite a sexy phrase, and it's at risk of kind of corruption by commercial interests. And so, you know, I think we need to be realistic in some capacity, but also, you know, this should be something for everyone that shouldn't cost. And so, they're my two kind of cautions about what it's not. If you want to find out a bit more, then the British Society of Lifestyle Medicine is a really good place to kind of check out.
That's a really helpful summary there. So that those sort of six pillars, but also just being really mindful that when you're sort of thinking about people's lifestyle, is not attributing blame and making sure that, you know, sort of aware that it's become such a sexy topic that corporates aren't sort of jumping on the bandwagon and influencing what you're doing without sort of giving due thought to it. So where do you fit in then, Cal? What is your role in lifestyle medicine, and how's that developed?
I feel like a bit of a fraud, Sophie. I'm just finished my GP training. I'm kind of 3 months having finished. So I took a slightly long protracted course, but I basically over my GP training, I got interested in lifestyle medicine and got kind of increasingly involved in the British Society of Lifestyle Medicine, but also the Royal College of GPs has got a physical activity and lifestyle medicine working group. So kind of through that, I ended up just eventually going into research. So spent 50% of my time as a GP, an academic GP trainee, and 50% clinical, and doing research largely into physical activity promotion and healthcare settings, but with a personal interest in lifestyle medicine more generally. Sometimes we just get lucky and we're in the right place at the right time. And that was definitely the case for me. And so I kind of ended up on the coattails of some much more impressive people than I, and was involved in writing the GP with extended role in lifestyle medicine guidelines that were released by the RCGP earlier this year. So yeah, that's kind of it wasn't an intended path. It wasn't something that I always wanted to pursue, and it's just kind of me pursuing passions along the way and just being very fortunate, really.
You're certainly not a fraud. I think that the wonderful thing about general practice is that it's such a sort of a varied career, and whether you're a trainee or afterwards, there's so many things you can do alongside and develop along the way. You mentioned a few things there, your sort of academic background and some work with the college and the British Society of Lifestyle Medicine. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the sort of activities you're involved in that are relating to lifestyle medicine?
I did some research at uni and hated it and never thought I'd end up being a academic or a part-time academic. And I think that when you find a topic that you're passionate about and interested in, the the your perceptions of what is enjoyable changes. So my job plan at the moment involves, I'm a salaried GP Monday, Tuesday up here in Scotland in Aberfeldy, which if you look at a map of Scotland, it's pretty much slap bang in the middle. It's a small Highland town, and like any good Highland town has a distillery. So people might know it from the whiskey. So Monday, Tuesday. And then 50% of my week is I'm an academic fellow in general practice at the University of Dundee doing research into physical activity promotion largely. So what kind of things I've been doing recently, I'm doing a bit of work with parkrun practices, looking at the initiative Parkrun Practices, which if you don't know about is almost 30% of GP practices now are parkrun practices in the UK. And it's a linking GPs practices with their local parkrun to kind of offer and advocate for people getting more active really. Moving Medicine, I've been doing a bit of work with them. And then just a few other kind of projects as well. So that's my kind of my research. And then half a day a week, the other half day a week, it sounds a bit grandiose, but the title is the Champion of Physical Activity and Lifestyle at the Royal College of GPs. So I do that with a guy called Hussein Alzubaydi, who's a super inspirational guy. I'm kind of just following in his trodden path, really. That basically involves kind of resource creation and advocacy. So we're kind of updating the physical activity toolkit at the moment that the RCGP provides for GP practices. I'm a trustee of a charity that kind of kicked up my interest off in lifestyle medicine. So it was actually a few conversations with some friends and colleagues, and then really on the back of my GP ST1QI project, we set up this organization called Healthiest Town Aberfeldy, which is basically trying to make, it sounds a bit grandiose, Aberfeldy Scotland's healthiest town. I don't think we have any intention of actually getting there. It's just trying to inspire change, and what we see our role is trying to address some of those social determinants of health and just make an environment locally which facilitates people being able to make decisions which are healthy or healthier. I've kind of got a podcast as well which is called The Movement Prescription. So yeah, it can be a bit of a busy week. So I had my appraisal yesterday, and I'm definitely acknowledging that I can't keep saying yes to everything was one of those big things. That work-life balance can be a challenge.
Wow. So I mean, certainly no one could accuse you of being physically inactive or lazy, certainly, Cal. You've got so many things going on, and I suppose you're a great advert for the sort of importance of lifestyle medicine in our role as general practitioners. So you mentioned a few things there, just to clarify. You mentioned moving in medicine. I'm not sure everyone would necessarily know what that is.
Moving Medicine, and it's a Faculty of Sport and Exercise Medicine back in 2018. It's quite widely acknowledged for the importance of physical activity promotion in healthcare settings. There's loads of challenges, and you know, time is a huge one, but knowledge and skills as well. And the average time spent teaching medical students about physical activity is 4.2 hours across the whole of medical school, whether that's 5 or 6 years. So the Faculty of Sport and Exercise Medicine created this or these resources called Moving Medicine. If you give a Google or if you just put movingmedicine.ac.uk into your browser, and there's these really cool resources which are condition specific. There's patient facing information leaflets, and then there's lots of resources for kind of healthcare professionals to help support patients with various conditions be more active. So yeah, it's really amazing resource in my opinion, and worth having a look if you don't know about it.
So we can certainly link to that at the bottom of the podcast for people to look into in more detail. You also said something which is a fantastic advert for the QIP as part of GP training, is that yours became a sort of stepping stone to developing something much bigger and much more important in the area that you were working. So I hope there's trainees out there listening thinking, oh, it's a bit of a frustration that I've got to fit this into my GP training. But if it's something that I'm really passionate about, I can develop it into something that's really meaningful and continues after GP training as well.
I was very lucky to have the support of the practice and given time to pursue it. But it's amazing if you pursue your interests and your passions where things go. And I think you alluded to it earlier, Sophie, is it's just how how flexible GP is, and it allows us as people to pursue the things that we're interested in, and you know, it's kind of a, you know, it's a bit of a shame if we don't. And so, yeah, I've just been lucky that I've been able to do that. And I'd really, you know, if there's one thing that I hope people take away from this is that enthusiasm goes a long way. I don't have a huge number of skills. I just have a lot of pathological enthusiasm.
How has your sort of career journey into it worked? You mentioned sort of project in your ST1 and charity involvement. How did, for those sort of sat there thinking, well, I don't have any involvement in lifestyle medicine at the moment, what are the sort of pathway that you took? How did you get more involved in it to become an expert?
As I mentioned, I had no interest in lifestyle medicine really before going into GP training. I wanted to be a rural GP. I wanted to I was in the military reserve, so I was in the army for a number of years, just as a reservist, and wanted to do that and do some mountain rescue. And then during COVID, just was struck by obviously there was the impact of COVID, but there was also the impact of non-communicable diseases, or you know, people were coming in with worsening blood pressure or stress, a load of different things, and they didn't appear to me to kind of have the ability to kind of self-manage, and that's not a blame thing, and I really stress that was just me kind of being struck by actually we need to change the environment is the problem here, and education. And so it led to these discussions that we had over lunch with one of the GP partners and another health professional in the town. We kind of met in a socially distance way and ended up being this QI project and grew into initially what we'd hoped would be like a guerrilla public health movement, just trying to make Aberfeldy Scotland's healthiest town, or at least kind of inspire people to work towards that. And then I kind of thought, oh well, if I want to do a QI project, I should probably think about evaluating this. How do you evaluate an idea? So I reached out to the local university, one of the professors. I just sent him an email. It was kind of random, but I maybe an approach I've taken is that you just got to put yourself out there, and if they don't reply, it doesn't really matter. Blair is such a lovely guy, and he got back to me and was very generous with his time. And before I know it, I have a job at the university and have become an academic GP trainee. I think it works slightly different in Scotland in that I didn't have to apply for it in advance of my training. So that happened the conversations happened in my GP ST1. I became an academic GP trainee in my ST2, and then went 50% clinical, 50% academic for ST3 and an ST4. And when I got that role, I thought, well, what kind of research am I going to do? So I reached out to the RCGP and Hussein, who I didn't know at the time. And again, he was just, you know, very generous. I basically said, look, I want to do some research. I don't really know what I want to do, but you do this thing called the Active Practice Charter, and I was wondering if I could evaluate it. And the long and the short of everything that's happened is that if you offer your time and tell people that you think what they do is really interesting and you'd love to know a bit more, people are so generous generally. And so I did that. I was very lucky that research kind of grew, and then I ended up spending some time with the WHO in Copenhagen in the summer of 2023, working, and they've got WHO Europe are based in Copenhagen. They have got a non-communicable diseases team out there. So I went and worked doing some work around physical activity promotion, a bit of a project on that. So spent the summer over there and took UPAR, an out of program research, or yeah, anyway. So I went out for 6 weeks and then, yeah, kind of came back and became an honorary clinical support fellow at the RCGP. So that was kind of unpaid and incorporated into my academic time in some capacity. And I'd always, the kind of the leading organization of lifestyle medicine is the British Society of Lifestyle Medicine. And early on in this whole process, I'd gone to the BSLM conference. I'd tried to present some research. Well, I did present some research, but so I got a free ticket, and it was amazing. You know, when you kind of go to these things and you just find people that you are inspired by and get on with it. It's like finding, you know, maybe described as like finding your tribe. And so so then I kind of got involved in that. And you kind of way leads on to way. And where I am now, I think a lot of the things that I now do are, I actually am really lucky to be paid for a lot of them now. It was on the back of having not been paid for a number of years. And so that's a really interesting challenge, is when you go from pursuing your passions in a in an interest in a kind of unpaid capacity, to then you have to value your time at some point, and finding that balance between between doing what you love and financial remuneration is an interesting one and kind of a juggle.
Yeah, I think it's a great example of the sort of evolution of a special interest development, and speak to lots of people who, yeah, started out thinking they wanted to do one thing and ended up in something else. But it's that enthusiasm that you talk about, and it's palpable listening to you, that allows you to sort of get involved in these things, and that they are often stepping stones. You know, people hear that you're doing something interesting, so they say, well, you know, do you want to get involved in this? And by starting to do something, you find the people who are doing the similar sort of thing, and reaching out helps you build that network. So thanks for that perfect sort of demonstration of how you can evolve these things, even if your starting point is, oh, I really don't know where I'm going with this, and you can't necessarily think strategically in the long run, but you can start to get involved in the bits that interest you and develop it from there. For those sort of sat there thinking, well, I'm really interested in, you know, the roles of physical activity and mental health support and nutrition in my patient's health, would you say that there's any sort of funding or bursaries or specific requirements that people ought to kind of look into if they want to start developing this sort of thing?
A really great starting place is the GP with Extended Role in Lifestyle Medicine framework on the RCGP website. There's loads of stuff on there, including qualifications. There are a number of possible qualifications. There's the British Society of Lifestyle Medicine core accreditation. There's the Red Whale Lifestyle Medicine course, amongst loads of others. These things, for me, it's just evolved, and it's still evolving. I see no long term. I'm just kind of muddling through, and things are happening, which is fun, and it's amazing where it leads. I've done things like group consultations in the practice. I was supported to do that as a trainee, which was really cool, but I didn't do any training as such for it. I did a bit of background reading, but there comes a point where you kind of, yeah, I felt like, well, I should just give it a go. And so do you need to do anything? Not necessarily. Is it helpful? Yes. So check out the framework. In terms of funding, I think it kind of changes deanery by deanery, and the study budget as a GP trainee can be really helpful for that, and using that to fund things like that. It should cover the lifestyle, the Red Wheel Lifestyle Medicine course. It might be a bit more tricky with the core accreditation, not least because it costs more. There are some kind of other organizations that might fund things. I think there's the Clear Wand Fund, which is a BMA GP charity. I got some funding for them for some courses in the past, so that's worth checking out. In terms of other places to get funding, I'm not totally sure. Most trusts, NHS trusts, have got an endowment fund. So, you know, maybe it's like NHS Lothian Charities or NHS Tayside. I've got a charity as well. And you can often apply for that for funding for things and ideas. And you know, that's something that I've done, actually. We had the podcast was in part funded by our local endowment fund. And so that's totally worth checking out. So and all trusts have them. And usually they're quite easy and really informative and helpful.
That's great to have some ideas of sort of out of the box thinking for finding funding to support ideas. I suppose what I'm certainly hearing from you is if you feel that this is a passionate for you, then go for it. But think about, you know, where that fits in with your community and your patients, and find the people who are doing it. And then once you've got the ideas, you can think about the funding to support that. What would you say are the main benefits for you, and particularly as your role in a GP, of having that interest that you've got in lifestyle medicine?
It's remaining energized and enthusiastic, and I love what I do. I really love my clinical role. I think if you did a lot of that, you could quite quickly get burnt out. So I feel blessed with that. I think also it complements my clinical role, that the kind of lifestyle medicine piece is relevant to everyone. And you know, we've been able to, in the practice, do group consultations, for example, which is a really kind of fun and slightly different way of delivering healthcare. And actually, I really enjoyed it. I think the patients that attended, it's not for everyone. You know, some patients don't want to talk about their issues, and certainly not in a public setting. And I totally get that. But some people do, and some people really like the peer support that comes with that. So that was great. But from my perspective, it was just a really different way of spending, you know, an hour and a half on a Tuesday afternoon. And it kind of just reimagined what that kind of practitioner patient relationship was, and you're able to do the things that you often feel that you want to do but aren't able to, which is talk about the social determinants of health or the different pillars of lifestyle medicine in a lot more detail. So yeah, I think I don't know if you got the impression that I'm enthusiastic about this, but that's the big thing. It fuels the enthusiasm.
Can I just ask there, Cal, just thinking about group consultations, because I'm sure there's lots of people sitting there thinking, how does that work? Can you just give us a very brief outline on what the consultation was about? How did that work, and what was the relationship to lifestyle medicine?
Group consultations, they've actually been going on for a while. They were initially in diabetes, been going on for kind of, or there's some evidence since the late 90s. So there's reasonable evidence for group consultations in diabetic populations. What is it? It's a 60 to 90 minute consultation with 8 to 15 people about all with the same condition. Usually it involves a combination of some education questions and answers. We did it with type 2 diabetes. We aimed at newly diagnosed type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes, so within the last 5 years, a diagnosis for the last 5 years. And we had three sessions. So session one kind of covered, well, what is diabetes? Session two was about pillars of lifestyle medicine. And session three was looking at goal setting and overcoming barriers. So having people predict what they think the barriers to them being able to sustain lifestyle changes might be. And in predicting them, how they then might overcome them. In the practice, we're about to do some for menopause. The uptake in people seeking kind of information about prostate cancer in light of Chris Hoy's news to kind of deliver some education. Sadly, I think, or the big learning lesson for me about group consultations is getting people there, particularly if it's a new thing for the practice. It can be a bit intimidating. And so the hardest thing is promoting it. And so give yourself time and think about how you're going to do that. That would be my advice, is, you know, posters in the waiting room are probably not sufficient, and we are learning that. So putting social media posts out if you can. The other thing, which I know colleagues have done and we are adopting now, is sending group texts. So for the menopause consultation, I can't quite remember the age group, but sending a group text to all females between the age of 50 and 65, just telling them that this is being run and asking them to call up and book in if they'd like to.
Awesome. There's some really great ideas there for others to think about in their own practice, even if they wouldn't necessarily consider themselves to be a budding lifestyle medicine doctor. But some really great ideas there and thoughts about engaging your practice population. Do you think there are any downsides that people ought to be aware of before they sort of proceed ahead as an aspiring lifestyle medicine doctor?
In terms of lifestyle medicine, I think we kind of touched on the challenges to lifestyle medicine as a concept, that from my perspective, the challenge has been work-life balance and learning to say no. And, you know, the enthusiasm has opened lots of doors, but the enthusiasm also makes it very hard to prioritize and tell people, actually, I don't have time. So I think that is the big challenge, is kind of self-protection.
That feels more pertinent in a sort of extended role, which is in some ways a bit more nebulous than saying, you know, I've got an interest in dermatology, which is almost a bit more prescriptive in what you're actually doing with your time, is that lifestyle medicine is so vast that you could say yes to all sorts of different things and develop in all sorts of different ways, which it sounds like you are doing in a wonderful way, but it's just being mindful of the time that takes and all the, you know, all the things you could do doesn't necessarily fit into the week, particularly when you've got a 4 month old. Thinking about those people who I'm sure are sat there very inspired to start thinking about doing some of the things you've talked about, where do you think are the best places for people to start? So they're sat there thinking, you know what, I've got a real interest in, you know, physical activity and supporting my patients to, you know, look after their mental health, to sleep better. Where should people start looking for ideas? You'd mentioned a few things previously around the framework and British Society of Lifestyle Medicine, but any other ideas you've got about where people should start out?
A really cool place to start might be if you're a GP trainee and there's a QIP, to link your GP practice with either Parkrun or try and become an active practice charter. You can find information on both of them on the RCGP website. So that would make a really cool QIP and a good place to start. One of the things that I would really encourage people to do is if they're interested in this, is just spend a bit of time finding out what's going on in your trust, but also in your local area anyway. And one thing that I've constantly been struck and surprised by is how much is happening. And maybe that happened too late. You know, maybe we kind of jumped in quite early. But basically, I don't think new is always better. And I think, you know, sometimes you can really shape things that exist already, or actually you'll just find the thing that fits the bill perfectly. And so, just do a bit of community mapping and find out what's happening and either... if there is still a gap, you know, jump in. If there's kind of something that fits the bill and you think could be done better, then why not reach out, join them and make what they're doing even better.
Awesome. What a lovely message there around, not reinventing the wheel and, you know, linking up, because I think it is easy sometimes in general practice is to sort of get a bit isolated in your own consultation room or your own practice and what you're doing. And there's so many great things going on, you know, regionally, nationally and in other areas. So that's a really nice message to be ending on. We're asking people to end with their sort of highlight or best moment of their time as a GP with an extended role in their interest. So would you mind sharing yours?
You do a lot of things and you don't know the impact it's having. And I think that's not just unique to medicine or research. You know, I think that's something that, you know, that feedback is often lost. And, you know, I've done a few talks over the last couple of years and I've often wondered, oh, how have they gone? How's that been received? And one of the really nice things, we had a new trainee in the practice. I actually found out not from her, but from one of the partners, that she chose to come to Aberfeldy because she'd heard a talk I'd done about lifestyle medicine and the healthiest time. And I think that kind of feedback's really nice, because there's lectures I've given to medical students or to trainees, and I thought, gosh, has that landed? I have no idea. You know, particularly on Zoom, you just have no concept of how it's gone. And so... yeah, kind of feedback like that, even if it, well, this was 18 months later, is really rewarding.
Thank you for joining us today, Cal, and for sharing what is an extremely inspirational journey you've had, but also so many really useful and thought-provoking sort of places to go looking for more information or looking for funding or looking for inspiration. And I'm sure lots of people will be sat there thinking, even if they don't necessarily want to become a GP with an extended role in lifestyle medicine, that actually looking at some of those resources could be really insightful for them and for their patients. So thank you so much for giving up your time and good luck, because it sounds like you're going to have a very interesting time going forwards.
Thanks, Sophia. Thanks for having me.
We hope that this careers podcast has motivated and inspired you to explore the variety of career options available as a GP. Speak to your appraiser, your local training programme directors, or perhaps join our RCGP mentoring programme for further support to diversify your career. Thanks for listening and good luck.
The GP Plus Careers Podcast.